A62. Number 26B.
Yes, you ask me about what do I mean by principle practicing. Well, what is in the general connotation practice? Practice means the application of a principle to a certain situation. That's usually the practice. If you are a lawyer, then you know a lawyer knows the principle of law. When he's a practicing lawyer, it means that he applies that law to specific situations. If you are a medical man, a doctor, you know the principle of medicine. But if you are a practical doctor, do you call it a practical doctor? We call it praktizierender Doktor. Well, one who works. He practices. He's a prac. Yeah. That means he applies his principle to the various situations. So when we lift this up into the realm of being, of the divine being, we must see that the divine being is the prac, the practitioner. Not I as a person am the practitioner that practices that divine principle. But the divine principle is both principle and idea, therefore he is its own prac. You call him prac? Huh? Practica.
Practice.
Practice. Yes, but the man, who do you call? What is? General practitioner. Huh? All right. So principle is its own, is itself the general practitioner, because principle and idea is the same thing. So we do not make two things, a principle and a general practitioner, and the general practitioner goes to the principle and says, all right, I take the divine principle and apply it and practice it on something. So in that unity of being, we therefore can see that principle is the general practitioner practicing itself, yeah? Operating by itself, huh? Yes? Good. So that is the law. That's why this law is so terrific, can you see? Because you begin to see how this divine principle practices and through what it practices. It practices through the ideas of mind, the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul, principle, life, truth and love. That's the practice. Therefore, that brings us back to the question that Louis was asking an hour before or so. Are we working in metaphysics or are we working in science? Actually, we are working in science because we are contemplating from the standpoint of principle. We are contemplating the infinite practice or operation or self-operation of the principle through all the ideas of the seven synonymous terms. And the only thing we can do is just to sit back and contemplate that very fact. Or can any one of us make God do something else than what he does anyway? Does anybody here feel that way, huh? So what on earth shall we do, except to accept what principle operates?
We have to have a completely open, clear consciousness ready every instant to receive that practice.
Yes.
Otherwise we can't tune in on it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So through these laws you tune in. See, if we don't tune in, this is animal magnetism. See, this is animal magnetism, not to tune in. Because the answer to animal magnetism that Mrs. Eddy gives is this, that she says, no, mind is the influence. No, spirit is reality, not something else. No, soul alone defines to you and tells you what is real and what is unreal. No, only principle can do anything in this world. Only principle can operate. Nothing else can operate. Yes? Says no to animal magnetism. Only life can give you life. Only life can bring you forward. Only life can do one thing, namely to build up, to be constructive. He says to animal magnetism, no, 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 only truth is true. Only true is right. Only true is really the true righteousness and justice. Only truth is really the theodicy of this world. Only truth reigns through truth. You can't reign. And she says, no to animal magnetism. You're not anything. Love is all. You can't be anything. You just can't be as anything. Love is all. That's, you see? If we don't accept that, we use animal magnetism. We use it. It is not the neighbor that uses animal magnetism on us. Yeah? See, that's again very good to see what Rosemary was asking before. See, is animal magnetism, is it still a question of one animal body having an influence on the other? And we said, actually not. You see, that was only Mesmer's false interpretation of what's going on, that we have an influence on us. When do we have an influence on our life? When we are not tuned in with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, then we malpractice ourselves. Ignorantly, maliciously, intentionally, unintentionally, benevolently, and so on, we are it. So that actually the chapter Animal Magnetism more or less says to us, don't use animal magnetism for you. Well, if it says don't use animal magnetism, then what shall we use? Use mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love as your influence. Then we handle animal magnetism within us. Else?
Max, this statement of sense of being is very apropos. To grasp the reality and order of being in its science, you must begin by reckoning God as the divine principle of all that really is.
Yes.
And by beginning with each of the synonyms in this way, we're beginning with the divine principle
of being.
And grasping the reality and order of being.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that, grasping it.
Grasping it, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Somehow we have to do something about it.
This is one of the sentences that has always impressed me in science and health, and the other one, let's put this one, impresses me more. The other one is working upwards towards mind, and I don't know where it is and can't quote it.
Good. Yeah. All right. Did we put that straight about practice, principle, practicing? Huh? So it is accepting a consciousness which accepts that principle is the general pack. Huh? Yeah. All right, we have another few minutes. And I always feel that law of life, which we have here, is a very important law. You know that law of life deals with what fundamental problem? What was the big problem in the fifth main edition? It was the warfare between the dragon and the woman, between the dragon and the idea. Persecuting the idea. Well, most of the people who are excommunicated seem to come under that law of animal magnetism that you are doomed. really doomed. All through history, it isn't just a question of the Christian Science movement. That has been a curse since, I guess, religion exists, in all religions, that if you are separating yourself from the accepted church, that you are doomed. And in so that's the point of the seventh main edition. Then in the Tone of Life, in the chapter on animal magnetism, you get again that very point where she speaks about what happens when you are pioneering in a new idea, and that then that old law comes up. Here she quotes Agassiz, that he has said, every great scientific truth goes through three stages. First, people say it conflicts with the Bible. Next, they say it has been discovered before. Lastly, they say they have always believed it. So, that is a very common saying. Which means what? First, you are always considered to be against the established truth. That you are a dissenter and therefore going against the way of life. And therefore I think in order to protect us from that curse, from that thousand-year-old curse that exists universally, collectively, and individually, we have to protect ourselves in this way that we begin to see that the very opposite law is true, that we can never fall under a curse, but just the opposite, that we fall under a terrific blessing the moment we begin to see a new idea and we stick to the new idea. I don't know how much you know about the curse in the religion, how much you are aware of the Roman Catholic curse. I mean, way back in history, you know, this was the most, the greatest challenge to not agree with the Pope. And if, I don't know how much European history you know it was always so that if a king or an emperor or any big man was somehow challenging the decree of the Pope and not submitting himself to the Pope, then he was not only excommunicated. And now you must help me, what is the English term? The bunch trowel. The anathema, perhaps, huh?
Heretic.
Yeah. All right, something like that was on was spoken out by the Pope. And that meant, more or less, you were finished. Huh? And this is true of practically every antediluvian religion. I don't know if you lived in the Christian Science field round about the 20s, 1930s, if you still have remembrance of that period. At that time, it was an accepted law that if you left the Mother Church, you had to die within 5 months.
Why
five? Because somehow they could see that those who did leave it, except perhaps Herbert Eustace, that they really touched the other end, that they went to the eternal hunting ground. Well, you laugh, you know. It wasn't to be ridiculed at that time.
I heard that recently. A couple of years now, the 5 months has gone in 2 years.
Yeah. And you read the old sentinels or journals, and you read that if you are leaving the Mother Church, that you deprive yourself of all the goods, of the blessing, of the protection. You are just exposed to the devil, to evil, whatever happens. Yes, you read the old journals of the 20s and 30s, even beginning of the 1940s. This was a law that was taught in every class who has been in class in those years. Nobody anymore. I seem to be the oldest guy in here, huh?
No, I'm not.
You have, huh? The law was laid down that hell and fire came on you if you left the Mother Church. If you went, isn't it so? Here is the authority. He knows all that history, huh? You can't believe it, you know? When we had the first Oxford Summer School, that's only 30 years ago, and I remember many who came there to the Oxford Summer School who were members of the church, and they were all trembling in their knees and saying, oh, you know, I'm all afraid, I'm full of fear, because when I said in the church that I'm going there, they said, all right, you go there, and your health and your business goes too. So you can't, you know, this, well, you said you heard it 2 years ago, huh?
No, I heard it within a
year. Within a year?
Somebody said, well, I'll be dead in 2 years.
Yeah? Yes? You are dead in 2 years. You see, you have only a few months to go. Well, that you are meeting a law of animal magnetism. You see? And it's this law that she is explaining here, really, in the fifth main edition, that it seems that whenever a new idea is brought to birth, that the dragon is right there to devour it. That's in the Apocalypse. That's biblical authority. But when the idea is born, the dragon stands there and says, I just wait until the child is born, then I eat it up. Yeah?
I feel that, this is all an impersonal thing that's going on, as obviously we all know. And just looking back through history, it's always occurred every time the new idea really starts to bloom. As the old is just about to die, it fights the hardest. And I think we shouldn't be surprised that the organisation in the next 10, 20 years, and certainly sooner, but in this period, will really mount quite impersonal, it'll be an impersonal surfacing that will appear to come from people, an attack like we haven't even seen. But I think we've got to see it right now, devoid of people, that it's an impersonal warfare going on between the idea and Error's attempt to destroy it. And then I think we can sort of relax about it and not be ignored by all the turns as they happen. Otherwise we sort of follow it as people, and it's like a big adventure story. And it's not really that at all.
Oh.
It's just history repeating itself, trying to get the idea.
And you see, this happens not only in a religion, this happens also in sciences. We have many incidents in this century where progressive scientists in the physical science, they just couldn't stomach the persecution, the ridicule that came from the whole community of scientists in their field. So it is not something that is, as you say, only something that happens in a church or at this time, but it's a universal claim. Actually, if we can put it into terms like we have seen it this week, It is the new paradigm always, and it is put into the old bottles. The old bottles break, and that breaking is naturally that persecution, that chemicalization, the crisis that comes up. The old cannot accept the new, or they wouldn't be old. So, but the claim is here. Animal magnetism is anyway only a claim. And we have seen in the fourth period, Mrs. Eddy has shown that it is impersonal and not personal. And therefore, just because of that, because it's impersonal, and therefore a universal claim, we somehow have to establish within us the law of life, so that we are absolutely untouched. And I always loved that law of life, you know. When I went through that period of excommunication, and these were other times than nowadays, you see, it was really hard, huh? Because at that time the organization was strong, was at the height of prosperity and success, and that was another battle than today. Today it's an easy thing to walk out compared with that. And that was the blessing of it. I knew I had to be serious about it. I couldn't just let it go, because the claim of that curse was so strong at that time that we really had to do something about it. And that was a beautiful time, because every day I just went through this beautiful law of life, which would show that for the love of adhering to a new idea, that I would be blessed enormously. That the fullness of life just would pour itself out upon me and give me the abundance of life. I accepted that. So I went every day through that law of life, as mind, as spirit, as soul, as principle, life, truth, and love. Just always seeing that for the very fact that we have the impartial love, the impersonal love, to go along a new idea, a higher idea, that for that very fact, mind would bless us with more ideas, with higher inspiration, with more vision, with more wisdom, with more insight, that for the very fact that we were loving a higher idea and were willing to lay down everything for that higher idea, that only the blessing of life, of spirit, would flow upon us. That therefore we would be blessed with infinite unfoldment, with infinite development of our vision. And that therefore no substance could be taken away, but that we would have infinite supply, that we would be supplied by everything that is necessary, which we need. Because the abundance of spirit is the supply of life. Or we would see at the point of soul that for the very fact that there is something within us that can follow a progressive idea and is willing to lay down mortal sense for it and the ego for it and the self-interest for it, and would lay that down for the soul sense, that the law of life as soul would give us infinite satisfaction, infinite bliss, infinite that sense of balance and of that sense of joy and happiness, where nothing could take us away the happiness for going along the way. Or that law of life as principle would come to each one of us, because he was willing to lay down a personal sense of being, would lay down a religious sense of the principle, would lay down a dogmatic sense of principle. For that very fact, principle will give us the abundance of demonstration, the abundance of spiritual power, the abundance of insight into the whole system of principle. and we got it. And so in life we could see that because we were willing, so to say, to lay down everything for going forward, for pioneering into the new idea, that that cannot be persecuted, that going the way of life would bring down upon us really the blessing of life, the abundance of life, therefore the abundance of the newness of life, the vitality of life, the spontaneity of life, the multiplication of life. The multiplication of what? The multiplication of everything, of abundance of substance, of supply, of provision, of maintenance, of support, and of everything. We never were in lack of everything, never. Or that we could see at the point of truth that because we were willing to lay down our false sense of truth and therefore accept the Christ consciousness as our leading, as our leader, and not the personal leader, not an organization as a leader, because we are willing to accept the Christ as the only thing to which we had to be faithful and to be loyal, that therefore that Christ consciousness will pour down the law of life to us, abundance of health. We never were sick. We never were sick. It never could touch us. Sickness could never touch us. We were never sick. They can't understand it, that we were never sick. They all expect that we will pass out, that we will be deprived of money, deprived of substance, deprived of supply, deprived of health, deprived of everything. We never were. None of us were ever. We enjoyed a very good sense of health and of wholeness because we are willing to give something to that Christ consciousness. So at the point of love we could also see, because we were willing really to give our whole love to God and not to people and not to an organization and not to a church build up, but to the love of God, and would do everything for the love of God, that we would be blessed abundantly by the abundance of life. And therefore we were blessed by love, always. We had a wonderful life. Looking back, I can't see how there are many other people who have such a wonderful, satisfying life as I had. I went through trouble. I went through the deep sea. I went through the Red Sea. All right, I went through the wilderness. But only because it makes the adventure of love much more beautiful. And so we never lose anything for giving everything to God. That's the law of life. Yeah?